July 27th, we are at the Mexican Cultural Center in San Jose, California. My name is Christine Navarro, and I am interviewing Mr. Chris Luna. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good, good. I'd like to talk a little bit about your experiences. So we're going to go ahead and start with a little bit about your background. When and where were you born?
I was born in Osuluama, Veracruz, Mexico. January 27 of 1925.
Okay, can you tell me about your family and any recollections about your hometown?
My hometown, we were a large family. We were 14 children. My mother and father were very poor, and I was the oldest in the family, so I had to work with my dad, you know, to help support the family. And consequently, my education was very skimpy, you know. It was later in life, I was 16, I think, when I went through a concentrated period of time studying with a tutor for 4 months in order to get my elementary certificate, so that I could start high school. And I did. Then I did 1 year of high school in Mexico and started my second year, but I could not continue. Because in Mexico, in that time, it was very difficult to go to high school and on up, because there were no schools, actually. They were part-time teachers doing it, and sometimes they just didn't have the classes.
Right.
And of course, I had to work to support myself, so I couldn't possibly do it. And there were 14 of us.
How old were you when you started to work?
Very young.
What were some of the jobs you used to do?
Well, I remember that I think I was either attempting to go to second or third grade, somewhere in there, and my dad would take me to where he was doing work, and he would put me, to do chores, and when I got tired, I would sit down in the shade, and I would take my little ABC book or whatever it was, I don't remember now, and started trying to learn to read. And later in life, I discovered that the reason my dad was doing that also is because he didn't know how to read and write. And so what he was doing is he was learning from me as I was learning. But I didn't know it. Then I found out later that was the case.
Wow, that must have been some kind of revelation to you.
Yes. Not only because my dad did learn, he learned faster than I did because, he had his experiences, life experiences and all that. But the thing that I admired him for is that he not only learned to read, but he try to advance his knowledge by looking for books that would teach him about life and how to live life, you know. And as he was searching for such a book, he found a person who was selling the Bible, about selling Bibles. And he told him, well, here's this book. He said, this is a book that will teach you about philosophy and teach you how to live life. So he let him borrow that book, and he said, if you like it, you can buy it. He says, I'll be back in 2 weeks. And my dad went back, and he bought it. And that's how he really learned to read. And he got in, and by learning from the Bible, eventually he became what they call a lay minister. Yeah.
So It was a full circle, right. Can I back you up for just a second?
Sure.
Could I ask you your parents' full names?
My father was Donaciano, that's Donaciano. Luna. And then his other name is Mar, M-A-R.
And your mother's name?
My mother's name, Josefina del Ángel Castellanos, I think that's the other name. And they're both deceased, naturally.
Now, tell me, they obviously saw that education was important because you.
Yes, my, and that's one thing that my dad used to tell me. He says, "Son, I can't give you an education, but whenever you can, you try to get an education because it's the best thing that you can have in life." For some reason, he realized that was important, and that's the reason that I was telling your co-worker in there, because I started telling him a little bit that I came to work Sabracero, and I only worked 6 months, only one contract, because I could have stayed for a longer period of time. But my reason for coming to work was not so much to come to work in the United States, but I wanted to continue my education, and I thought that if I could make connections here in the U.S., you know, and go to school here, that then that would fulfill my dream. And I was very happy and lucky to have been able to do that. I made my connection with one of the schools here, and it was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was in Arizona, but the person that I met knew the person who was in charge of a school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and somehow he saw something in me and asked me. He says, "How much education do you have?" And I told him. He asked me, "Do you want to go back to school?" And I said, "Yes, that's what I want to do." And he says, "Okay, I'll put you in touch with this person, and then you can take it from there." And I was told that I could enroll in the school the following September. This was like in November, somewhere in there. In the following September, my contract was over at the end of December. So I went back to Mexico. I got my papers to come back as a student, and I went to school. I started school in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
What a wonderful transition.
And then from there, I continued on to college in Decatur, Illinois.
Wow. Totally different. Let's talk a little bit about the Bracero program. How did you find out about it?
I was living in San Luis Potosí. I had just actually branched out, moved away from home. And I had a friend that lived in San Luis Potosí, and I went to stay with his family, and I was working there, and I wanted to see if I could go back to school, but it was very difficult because they had any evening classes, and I had to work during the day. And then when I was there, and I was attending a Presbyterian church, I discovered that a person who was in charge of the Bracero program, the person from the U.S. who was in charge of the Bracero program, was attending that church.
Do you remember his name?
I don't remember his name. I don't remember.
It's a hard thing.
He was from Texas. It's a long time. I was from Texas. And so I talked to him, and he said, I said, "Well, you just go through the Mexican side, and when you come to the U.S. side," he says, I'll hire you. I'll put you through the process," and it happened. That's the way it happened, and I think it took like about 4 weeks, I think, and then I was put in a train there in San Luis Potosí. Traveled. It was late afternoon, and we traveled during the night. And the thing is, we got to El Paso. I think like maybe El Paso, Texas. I think it was like three 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that very same day, they put us in a train around 5 o'clock in the evening.
In El Paso,
on the U.S. side, they put us in another train, and I didn't know where I was going. We were at the place where we were supposed to be, and they let us off. I discovered they let us off at Yuma, Arizona, and from there they took us on a flatbed truck, you know, to a camp. A tent camp where we stayed.
Were you apprehensive? How old were you when you?
I was 19, okay. but I was, you know, I was very young, in the sense that I was not used to a different area like that. In that sense, that I was not wise in many ways, because I was raised being very polite, very respectful, and all that, you know, and of course, you know that not everybody's like that.
Was that a hard transition?
It was kind of hard. It was hard, not necessarily getting along with people. With the other co-workers. It was hard because it was very, extremely hot. This was in June. Extremely hot, and we lived in tents. Food was prepared, breakfast was prepared real early in the morning, and by the time you got there, it was already on the table. If it was oatmeal and eggs, usually, and oatmeal will be cold, and it wasn't the way I was used to eating it.
Right.
and the eggs would be also cold. So, but that was okay, because I was willing to work. But working out on the tracks, you know, it was kind of difficult because it was very extremely hot. We had to drink a lot of water. And I came from a fairly warm area, you know, but not extremely hot like that.
So you worked on the railroad?
Yes.
Ah.
I worked on the railroad, right.
Okay, you worked for Southern Pacific?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the food. They mentioned that it was so different from what you had.
Well, definitely, because even, let's say, oatmeal, you know, at home, I mean, you cook oatmeal and you sweeten it up and you put milk and it's already done, you know, like that. And over here and there, I mean, it was just oatmeal alone by itself. And when it was cold, you had to put milk and you had to put sugar in it. And it just, you know, it wasn't, and especially, I don't know if you ever have experienced, extreme heat, but it's so hot during the day and even at night. And then the morning when you wake up, you're not hungry. But you have to eat because you know that, you won't get to eat until noon. Until
Do they provide adequate drinking?
Drinking water, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Drinking water, we were provided with plenty of water. Food was usually a stew, you know, for so many people that were there, they had to, and they brought it in big containers, you know, big containers. If you want me to continue with
sure,
the story,
go ahead.
Okay. Because of the heat and because I was not eating quite right, I asked them to, if they could change me or move me to a different area where it was cooler, a little bit cooler than Yuma, Arizona. And I was moved, and I can't remember of the place. You notice that I left one blank in here. Mm-hmm. But it was up on the other side of, I think it was northern Arizona, where it was cooler. And I know that it was close to the border of New Mexico. Because I could hear people talk about, because I didn't know any English at all, you know, and But this was slightly different in the sense that we lived in railroad cars. But the process of the food was the same. And the railroad cars at least were a little bit better, not as bad as the tents. But the man in charge was very, I say racist now because I know what that means, you know. But he didn't treat us nice at all. He called, I remember hearing the word, "you dogs," you know, and I didn't know what he was saying until somebody told me. And so there was about four or five of us that got together and decided that we were not going to stay there. So we went and asked him for a pass. He was supposed to give us a pass to go back to the central offices in Tucson, Arizona. And he said that he would not give us a pass. So what we did is that we got together, and we just one morning we took off to the little town, because we were away from the little town. We walked to a little town, and I can't remember the name of the town, and got on a freight train. And it almost cost me my life I didn't know what I had, but I now, after I learned what it was, I got sunstroke, you know. Yeah, and so when I got off of the freight train in Tucson, of course I needed to drink water. We didn't have water, and so we traveled all day, almost, you know, to get there. And I went and drank water, and I lay down and I went to sleep. I woke up. I don't know how long I slept, but it was dark already when I woke up. And so I had heard that if you went to the highway, you know, and went like this, that somebody would pick you up. And that's what I did. And somebody picked me up and took me to the center of town, Tucson. And I told them to take him near the train station, because that's where the offices were. So I went and got a room to stay overnight, and the next morning I went to the offices and I told them that I wanted to go back to Mexico, that I didn't want to I didn't want to work under those conditions. And of course the person there told me, said, "Well, you know, it costs us a lot of money to bring you here, so we'd rather have you stay if we can find a place for you." And so I told myself, okay, I said, find me a place that is not as hot as Yuma, Arizona, and where the person in charge is going to be a decent person. And he said, I have a place for you. He says, I'm gonna send you to a section, which is different than the other two places. Because the section is manned usually partly by people that live in the U.S., you know, and partly by Braceros. And so he sent me to Tempe, Arizona. And that's where I stayed the rest of that. It was about the end of August, in the middle of August, somewhere in there, if I remember correctly. And I finished the end. He said, if you work hard, he'll treat you nice. And of course, there was no problem, you know, for me, because I was used to working. And he was a very nice person. I had a very nice experience with him. They had places where we lived, you know, little homes or houses where we lived. I ended up not staying there because I didn't like the way some of the workers lived. That is, you know, during the weekend, like getting drunk. And one time when there were some, a gun was discharged in there, I decided that I didn't want to be there. And I already had met a family there with whom I was going to church. And they had an extra room, so I asked them if I could rent that extra room. And they said yes, so that's what I did. And I moved away from the section. But he was always, sometimes he would walk down to the store and he'd come by and he would invite me to go with him, you know, to the grocery store. So I had both experiences, a very nice experience and a bad experience.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the jobs you did, or the job you did.
The job that we had was to keep the a certain section. That's why they call them sections. You know, in this one, it's a section of the tracks in good repair. And that's all, you know, everywhere where they needed to work on it. Sometimes, like, if the rail is going down and they need to put rock underneath and then all that, and if they need to change rails, you know, that's what we did. It was hard work, yeah.
Did you know what company you worked for at that time?
Yeah, Southern Pacific.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about going to the camp in Northern Arizona. Can you elaborate a little bit more about the experiences and why they were so bad and so poor? Some of the incidents maybe that occurred, or some of the
conditions, the food was about the same. You know, when we got out, when we went to the cafeteria or to the area where they served the food, it was already there. The conditions that were made very bad is that he was always cussing at us or doing whatever it is. He was in our case. He just didn't like Mexican workers.
Was he white?
He was white.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he speak to you in Spanish at
no,
all, or did
no,
he communicate
no,
only in English?
No, only in English. No.
Okay.
And
was he ever physically abusive, or was he just verbal?
Well,
abusive?
He just verbal abusive. Yeah. I know, because I would not have left. Remembering, you know, I would not have left if I didn't feel that, you know, that he was really harassing us all the time, because it didn't happen in Yuma, Arizona. You know, the person who was in charge there of the group, he was good. And naturally, that, you know, when it's hot, a lot of times you can't, especially if you are hammering, you know, like if you're driving there, there are two people doing that when they did it, two people, and you have to keep in rhythm. See, and if you don't keep in rhythm, then they're gonna hit you. They're gonna hit your hammer, and it doesn't feel good.
Right.
Yeah. And naturally, that you have to stop, and you say, okay, I can't do it, so I have to stop. And that's when he would come and says, you know, you go. And so we felt that he just didn't understand the work, or he didn't like the workers, one or the other, you know.
Do you remember any of the names of the other gentlemen that?
No, I don't remember their names.
With?
No.
But there were four of you that decided.
There were four
to
of
leave.
Us. Yeah. For us to leave, yeah, and I don't remember their names at all. Yeah, in that little town, the little time that we were there, also, it happened to me, and I don't remember if anybody was with me, because I think I was with myself. Maybe I think one of them was with me, and we went to a restaurant, and we wanted to have breakfast, and we sat there, and we sat at the counter. And we waited and waited and waited, and they wouldn't serve us. And then we asked, you know, whatever signs we made, they said, out. They didn't serve Mexicans there, that's why.
Wow.
I discovered later.
Did you encounter that very often? Going to the small towns?
Okay. Since we weren't there very long, in Tempe, I never encountered that. Of course, usually I ate with this family a lot of times. I ate a lot with their family instead of, but I would go to a Mexican restaurant a lot of new times. What I did encounter is sometimes in some Mexican restaurants is that I knew that they probably could speak Spanish, you know, but they would not speak Spanish.
Why do you think that is?
I think I learned later is that it was frowned upon people, you know. Yeah, I learned the history a little bit of they asked me, because a lot of people would ask me, well, why do you feel the way you feel? I said, I'll tell you why I feel the way I feel. I said, I have a very good self-concept of myself. I said, if I had been raised here, I probably wouldn't. I said, but I, since I wasn't raised here, I do. And I understand what people went through.
How did you communicate with your family in Mexico? Or did you?
I wrote letters. Yeah, I wrote letters.
To your mother?
To my dad. My dad was the letter writer, yeah. Yeah, I wrote letters to them because at that time, you know, there was the town where I lived, there was no electricity, no, naturally no telephones. it was primitive, very primitive.
Can you tell me, let's talk a little bit about the living conditions and the daily routine. How many days a week did you work?
We worked six days. We worked from Monday through Saturday.
We worked about
10 hours. Yeah. We worked about 10 hours
a
day.
Tell me about the living conditions. You said you lived in tents in one period.
Yeah. We lived in a tent.
How many people lived in a tent?
I can't remember, quite a few. It was a big tent, and we have cots, you know, cots to sleep on, and showers where many of us had to go and shower at the same time. Yeah, it was out in the, as they say, in the boondocks. You know, it was close to. I would say maybe 20 miles away from Yuma, Arizona, but it was out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
I'm going to back you up just real quick. My mistake. When you were going through El Paso, were you detained in El Paso or just moved on a different car onto Yuma? I mean, did you ever stop in El Paso? They talk about a fumigation process.
Oh, okay. We did. We didn't. They didn't do anything like that. Us okay. At all. We were changed from the train that we had on, you know, we got into Mexico, and the same train took us across, but from there, then we were transferred to another train. Okay. And of course, not all the people, when, you know, we went into different trains.
Let's talk a little bit about your salary. Do you remember how much you were paid?
Yeah, I remember, and I don't remember if I got any more than what they got, 57 cents an hour. I remember that.
Wow, to the penny.
Yeah.
And how often did you get paid?
Every 2 weeks.
And did you send money home?
Yes, some, but I saved my money so that I could, when I went back, I could do what I needed to do, you know, to get my papers, my passport, my visa, and all that. And it took quite a while. It took
about
5 months.
Tell me about the family that helped you. They seemed instrumental in your transition into the U.S. and that you lived with for a period. Do you remember their names?
Yes, I remember she passed away. Her name is Elizabeth Rodriguez. And
how did you meet?
Church.
Okay.
Yeah. So in Tempe, I was raised in Presbyterian church. And there wasn't one there. There was one in Phoenix. And sometimes I would go to Phoenix. Once I found out that there was one in Phoenix, I would take the bus about 9 miles from Tempe. Now it's all one area, one city, you know. It's all populated.
Right.
And I would go sometimes over there, but I started going to a Methodist church there in Tempe, and that's where I met this family. And I guess the reason I was attracted to them and they liked me is that she had a son in the Navy. And that was the only son that she had, you know, at home at that time. And her daughter-in-law was living with her. And she had, at that particular time, she had a young little baby, you know. And then, so I got to know them, and they would invite me to eat quite often after church. And so I knew that they had a room that was available there. That's why I was able to do it. So they were helpful because when I was coming back into the United States to go to school, I was given the wrong type of visa, and so I had to wait there. I came back through Juarez, El Paso, Texas. And I had to go back to Juarez and go to the consulate, or to the consul there, yeah, consulate, to change my visa. But I had to get a new copy of my birth certificate in order to do it. So I had to write my father about it, and that would take about anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 weeks by the time the mail gets there and by the time he goes to get the copy and send it to me. And so that's another very interesting experience that I had, you know, in there waiting. I think I had to wait in Juarez.
Tell me what it was.
Because I didn't, you know, I'd never been in Juarez. I mean, you know, to live or anything. I didn't know anybody. And so I just did what my father, you know, taught me. Always when you're in a city and you don't know where to go, always go to the church. And so that's what I did. And even though the minister in that particular church did not, he let me stay one night in there, the day that I arrived there, and I didn't know where to go, and I didn't have really enough money to go to a hotel and all that. So he said, okay, I'll let you stay here overnight, said, but I'm going to find a place for you where you can stay and you can do things. So he found a lady that would prepare meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for people that worked, you know, outside, and they just came there to eat. And that was good because I could help her then. So that's what I did. She said, you can stay here and you can help me if you want to get your food. And that's what I did. So that was very fortunate. And then I talked to some of the workers that were coming there. They were digging ditches and things like that. And so I asked how much they paid. And they told me and said, do you think I could... I could go and work with you guys? And they said, yeah. So I went and dug ditches, and I told the lady, I said, I'll help you in the morning, and then when I come to for lunch, I'll help you then, and then in the evening, I'll still help you. And that's what I did, because I needed to have a little bit of money for something. So in the meantime, I had written to this lady in Tempe, Arizona, and I had asked her, at that time, you know, I asked her for $8, $20, yeah, $20, because I needed $8 for the passport, and I figured I needed a little bit to buy my bus ticket, you know, to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and so they loaned me $20, and I sent it to them as soon as I was able to get them, because I went into a boarding school. You know, where it was a mission school, Presbyterian mission school, and they had at that particular time a lot of land. They've sold quite a bit of it now, but they had a lot of land. They had their own cows. They raised pigs. They had areas where they grew alfalfa for the cows and all that. And so I was able to stay there, to live there. And work during the summer, you know. And one of my duties was, since I knew how to milk, and they asked me if I knew how to milk, and I said, yeah. And of course, I didn't know that it wasn't with my hands, it was machines. Oh. they already had machines, so that was a new experience. But that was my job, you know, get up at about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, go milk the cows. And then, of course, we all had duties during the day, being a boarding school.
Tell me, let's go back to Tempe, Arizona. You said that was a good experience for you working as a bracero.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me why that was?
Because of the person in charge, the supervisor there was a very fair person, and he was, you know, naturally he was Anglo also.
Were any of the supervisors of Mexican descent, or were they?
Only the one that was in charge of the not in charge, but when he was not there, then there was a native-born Latino. I don't know if he was Mexican, but I guess he was, since the majority of the Latinos in that area are of Mexican descent. And he was okay. He was all
right. Did he treat you well? Did he treat you fairly?
Yeah, he was fine. Because he would just took over when he was not there.
Were there any accidents that happened that you heard of or during your tenure there?
No. I think, if I remember correctly, but I don't remember clearly, one of them got hit, you know, with a hammer, but it was nothing serious.
What did you do on your day off?
They would take us, when we lived in, when I was in Yuma, they would take, on Sunday morning, they would take us, they would load us up in the flatbed truck, you know, and take us over to Yuma for us to go and eat. And so what I would do, I'd go to the restaurant right away, you know, and have some food.
Some real food. Not some cold oatmeal.
And I used to tell people, you know, finally learned, I saw what somebody was eating, and I asked what it was, you know. And they said, it's ham and eggs. And so when I was able to say it, I said, what do you want? Ham and eggs. And every time I went, what do you want? Ham and eggs.
You obviously enjoyed it.
Well,
favorite.
It was good.
It's always good.
Yeah,
right?
It's always good.
Absolutely. Tell me the role of that the church has played in your life. I can tell that there's a connection there.
The church has, through my dad, the church has played a big role, yeah. the main reason that I was able to make a connection with a school in the U.S. was that I was helping when I was in Tempe. I heard of a Presbyterian church near Phoenix. The little town was called Guadalupe. And it was mostly, it's a church of Native Americans, Latinos and Native Americans. But I heard that the pastor there was from Veracruz. Reverend Pasos, I still remember his name. And so I decided to go and visit over there. And so we hit it well, and he needed somebody to help him with Sunday school and all that. And he said, If you want to do that, I'll come over and get you every morning, you know, on Sunday morning, and then you can stay for lunch, and then I'll take you back in the afternoon. And so one Sunday, he came by, and he said, I have to go to Phoenix, to the airport, so I have to pick up a missionary that is coming to check on our work. And he was in charge of the Western missions from New York. And when we were driving in the car, you know, he was talking with me and asking me a lot of questions. And that's when he asked me if I wanted to continue going to school, continue my education. And I said that yes. And he is the one that put me in contact with the superintendent of the school in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
So he was instrumental.
So he was instrumental, right.
How do you think that changed the course of your life in the direction?
Well, a lot, because at that particular time, you know, my my aim was to finish high school, at least, and learn English, and then go back to Mexico and be able to use English as something that I, you know, I could do in my, I use in my work. But then I did well, even though I did not know there was a lady there in Menal School. Menal School is the one in Albuquerque, that saw the potential in me, but only that my language is the one that was going to keep me from doing that. And what she did is not only helped me a lot, like they had visitation time every evening for a half an hour. And I didn't visit. I went to her, and she would tutor me in pronunciation and words and all that.
Do you remember her name?
Yes, Barbara. Barbara, Miss Barbara.
Okay.
Yeah. What's her first name? I forget. But her last name, Barbara.
Okay.
And let's see, I lost my...
I'm sorry. The tutoring, she would tutor you.
Oh, yes, she would tutor me. Oh, okay. And she went and told them, said, we're not going to give him any grades this year, you know, until we see what he can do. So my second year, then that's when they started giving me grades. And then they went by what I did during my second year. And even then, you know, my English was still, I did well in math, you know, because at that time, you know, I had a very, a very, very good memory, because if I saw how they did it, you know, they did a problem, I could remember, you know, even though I discovered later that I didn't really know the reason why, you know, but that was okay, because I could still do it.
Right.
Yeah, because later I went and studied mathematics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so I discovered that I didn't know the reason behind it, but I could do it.
And that's not an easy subject.
That's right. So that helped me, and so that inspired me. And I said, well, I guess I do have enough intelligence or whatever it takes, you know, to go on to college. And as I was finishing my senior year, there was an assistant minister to the First Presbyterian Church, because there was a first and a second. The second one was in Spanish. That had the new a man who was the president of college. At that time, it was still, I think, a Presbyterian university, or at least they had the support of the Presbyterian Church, called Millikan University in Decatur, Illinois. And a man from Illinois who had problems learning a second language when he went to school, he had gone to Argentina or somewhere, and he wanted to travel more in Central and South America or something like that, and he wanted to learn Spanish. And he wrote a letter to two places, one to the University of Illinois and one to president of Millikan University. And, of course, the president of Millikan University said, oh, well, I have my friend over there in Albuquerque. He must know somebody over there. So he relayed that letter to him. And, of course, the assistant pastor there in Albuquerque said, well, I know Miss Barber at Menal, so she must know somebody. So then Miss Barber came to me and said, how would you like to go to school in Illinois? Because I was already thinking of going to college, but there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, or in Las Vegas, New Mexico, where there's a university. And so then I said, I don't know. I mean, it was hard for me to get this far right now, and now I have to change, you know, again. But I said, I'll think about it. And then I thought, well, I did it once, so why not do it again? So I told her, yeah, I'll go. So I the man offered me a job, a summer job, for 4 years, for the years that I would be going to school. And he paid me well for doing just odd jobs and tutoring him in Spanish, you know, like maybe sometimes 3 times a day, sometimes just 2 times a day. Most of the time we were doing other things. And because he was retired, he wanted to keep busy, and he needed somebody, you know, to do it with him, I think. But that was the case. But anyway, so that helped me. That helped me a lot economically, that is, you know, to be able to live by independently. And because I had a partial scholarship to the university, and but then working part-time and all that, I was able to do that. And that's how I ended up in Illinois.
Wow. We're going to do some final reflections. Can you tell me what the term bracero means to you?
Well, bracero to me, when it meant worker.
That's true, and that's
right.
What it means.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, regarding your memories of being a bracero, were they mainly positive, negative, or?
I would say, you know, definitely positive for me. Even though I had some negative things, I don't dwell on them, because everything that came out of the bracero program was very positive, in the sense that I took advantage of the opportunities.
Did being a bracero change your life?
Definitely.
Tell me how.
Definitely, because I probably would not have been out of Mexico if I hadn't come to the U.S. as a bracero.
How many children do you have?
Five.
Five children.
Mm-hmm. And I have 12 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren.
Wow. That's amazing. Are there any final reflections you would like to, any final comments that you would like to make?
Well, I'm just happy to share this experience.
Thank you.
You know,
very
with
much.
Anybody.
That's wonderful, and we're glad that you did. We appreciate you coming in.
And consequently, if I hadn't come as a bracero, I probably would not have gotten an education, gone as far as I did. Because coming from a very poor family, you know, I was able in this country has a lot to offer if you take advantage of it. And also if you lend yourself, you know, to be able to take care or to accept that opportunity. I became a teacher. I worked in industry first, and when I moved to California, I decided that I would become a teacher, and I went back to school, and I did it, and I worked in teaching for about 29 and a half years. And that was, it's a very fulfilling profession. It's hard. It's not easy. It's very hard. But I became a teacher of mathematics. I could have become a teacher of Spanish, but I wanted to show people that we are not just, because I saw the trend in the, if you want to call it a sort of, I don't want to say the word racist, but I could see where a lot of people were trying to get Hispanics, towards teaching Spanish. Why don't you teach Spanish? And that's what I was told in one interview. I said, why don't you teach Spanish? I said, no, because I purposely studied mathematics to teach mathematics, and that's what I'm going to teach. I may not teach at your district. I said, but I'm going to teach mathematics in some district. Somebody will give me the chance, and that's what happened. In Oakland, I was given a chance to teach mathematics, and I taught there for 12 years. And then I finished my career in bilingual education.
As you know, they're putting together a traveling exhibit for the Smithsonian. What elements or things do you see that are important that need to be included in this exhibit about braceros?
About braceros, that's a hard question. Well, I think one is when you come into a different culture, you need to be cognizant, that you have to adapt to the new culture. It doesn't mean that you're gonna forget and leave your culture, but you have to adapt to the new culture. And the way that I have done, I said, I have taken the best of this culture, and I have kept what I want of my own culture. I will never forget when I was in bilingual education. I was talking to a lady, and she said, I have heard you speak, and you are a good speaker. He says, you just need a little refinement in your English. And I told her, I said, you know what? As long as people can understand me, I said, that's all I want. I want to keep that part of me. Whatever you want to call it, accent, a variation of speech, whatever it is, I said, that I want to keep. I said, as long as people understand, and I know people understand me, I said, because I can put my thoughts across, and I know that people understood what I said. I said, and that's good enough for me.
Did your family remain in Mexico, or did they?
First, I brought my oldest sister, and then I brought one of my brothers. I don't remember where. I think it's like the fifth brother. And then I brought another brother. And then I wanted to bring my parents close to me, and in Mexico, but I couldn't because they had three girls, young girls. And I wanted to help them. And what I did is I ended up bringing them here to the United States together. Then my dad could not adjust too well, so he decided that after a year or so, he decided to go back to Mexico, but I didn't let him take the girls. We kept the girls. So they were, going back and forth. But they both passed away here in San Jose.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're here in San Jose.
So going through the Bracero program changed not only your life.
But it changed their life.
Tremendously.
It changed their life.
Before
my mother passed away, because she passed away after my dad did. My dad died of cancer in 1973. and my mom passed away in 1990. She lived with me, I think, for about close to a year before she passed away. And I was talking to her one day, and I said, "Mom, I said, if I ever did anything that hurt you, I said, I probably did not mean it, and I want you to forgive me if there is such a thing." And she said, "No, son, just, you never did anything to hurt me. The only thing was," this is when you left for the United States, says, "I felt that I would never see you again."
It's okay. Let me take a moment. Are you okay?
I'm sorry.
Oh, please, don't be sorry. Don't. You probably miss her tremendously.
And I told her, I said, "Did you ever think that you would come to the U.S., I said, "and live a different life?" He said, "Well, no."
And you made that happen.
I helped them a lot, yeah. I helped all my family the most I could.
You made that happen.
Because that was my intent when I did what I did, you know.
Did you ever think of not going back to Mexico?
Yes, but once I got married here and I had family, no, because my family is here. I have family still. I have one sister. I have five sisters. Four of them are here in the U.S. Only one is in Mexico. So I still have one in Mexico. And I still have some brothers in Mexico.
Your mother must have been very proud of you.
I guess she, you know, she was not the person that would convey it.
She was, absolutely.
But she showed it, yeah.
She was very proud.
So, okay. Thank you for it.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
I can contain. That's okay.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't.
Okay. Well, no, please don't. Yeah. I just want to make sure you're okay.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm all right.
That was great. That was